everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. But even if he was on this side of the glass with me, he would be welcoming you to the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday as we get ready to wrap up 2020. By 2020, I can't say I missed, or I'm not going to say I really miss you when I see you in the rearview mirror. It has been quite a year, hasn't it? It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and kvoi.com, where we take the live feed. Coming up on our 10-year anniversary, actually, we launch into year 11 with the Buckmaster Show this upcoming Monday. So the 10 years, 10 full years in the books, getting ready to get into another decade. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Tucson-based Vector Launch was developing small rockets designed to carry micro satellites into orbit. The company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and laid off about 150 employees in December, a year ago. This December in 2019, after a major investor pulled its funding, Vector's new owners are restarting operations here in Tucson, while Vector's former CEO, Jim Cantrell, has co-founded a new small rocket space transportation company here in Tucson. Jim Cantrell was an early member of Elon Musk's SpaceX team. He calls his new company Phantom Space, which will provide micro satellite launch services as well as small satellites and propulsion systems. Jim Cantrell joining me now in studio. Jim, good to see you again.
Always a pleasure to be here, Bill.
So, what happened to Vector? I mean, we've talked over the years. It seemed like it had there was nowhere to go but up, so to speak, for the company. What happened?
Yeah, so really there's kind of two tracks to talk about what happened. There's the track about, you know, what exactly happened in terms of a series of events, and then what was really behind that, you know. And I've had well over a year to reflect on the what you know, the overall cause of this was. And I would have to say that you know, as I look back, it was that we, the founders, there were four of us, weren't really in alignment as to what the company should be. And that lack of alignment over time caused cracks that eventually showed that the investors saw, and they pulled out. But in terms of, you know, what physically happened that led to the my leaving and then eventually their bankruptcy was kind of an interesting story. We had raised a little over $100 million to that point, and this was August of 2019 that we were in the middle of another raise. So between large fundraisings, we sometimes do what we call bridge rounds. So we bridge between, you know, $70, $100 million kinds of sizes, and that's precisely what we were doing. And so part of that activity, you know, was talking to the existing investors and getting them to you know, come up with a little bit of money for that. And Sequoia was our very first big investor, and they're, you know, one of the
biggest. I remember that.
Yeah.
We had you on the show right after the announcement that Sequoia was on board to put some money into the company,
right.
And you were elated, as you should have been.
Yeah.
At the time, this was a huge financial investment, and the future really did look bright.
Yeah, and it was bright. And So Sequoia, roughly the 3rd of August, it was like a Tuesday, let us know that they would not be investing in this bridge round, and that they would be pulling their board member off of our board.
Whoa.
And this came after a Monday morning partner meeting, which they have every week, and where they review their investments. And the Friday before that, the same board member on our board was telling us that, you know, he thought they may even lead the bridge round. So he was completely surprised by what happened as well. Something turned very negative within the partnership at Sequoia. And so by about Wednesday, we realized that, you know, we had to stop accepting money on this bridge round. So because of the Sequoia disclosure. And so we were, unfortunately, we had about $15 million in the bank, and we were under the 60-day cash on hand limit that the federal government requires for the Warren Act. And so upon advice of attorneys, the only thing we had to do was either find some more money or lay everybody off, including ourselves, to keep everybody on the board out of the felony territory. So that was highly desirable, I can tell you. I found a $10 million investor.
You did?
Yes, I did. Morgan Brook Capital in Denver. Mm-hmm. And he, in fact, was one of our original investors and very much believed in Vector. For reasons that I failed to understand, the rest of the board did not even want to take this to the shareholders, which in my view was a breach of their fiduciary responsibility and was going to lead to a lawsuit. So
if they had, do you think the shareholders would have said, okay?
Absolutely. What was the alternative?
All right.
Right. So it was at a discounted value on the company, but this is the sort of thing that you do when these things happen. You rebuild from there. And this investor wanted to restructure the company. And I think in ways that many of the board members would have personally lost a position. And so I think that's why they were against it.
So they wanted to go down. Well, I don't know if they wanted to, but they wound up going down with the ship rather than saying, hey, this is, you know, I'll go along with this plan. Yeah. Getting back to Sequoia, did you ever learn why Sequoia decided to bail out? What was there somebody that went sour on you guys?
So their stated reasons to us was they no longer believed in the launch market, and that they didn't think our approach was the correct one. And so there were other things that has appeared in the news where one of our board members claims that he actually went to Sequoia and made accusations of financial mismanagement, which were simply not true. And so there may have been some backdooring going on there with, you know, some of the infighting that was going on. And if you go back a couple months, I had found out after I came back from a vacation in Italy that there was a group of people trying to get me fired as CEO. And so that was after I had demoted one of our co-founders because our technology was behind schedule. And so I was under pressure from the board and the investors to do something. And so I had to demote one of the co-founders and bring in another person. And so he led a bit of a palace coup against me that it wasn't apparent until just before the infamous August of 2019. So
Vector's reemerging. I mean, obviously this is a market. There's a market there.
Yeah. So there's clearly a market and always has been. And the original idea behind the mass-manufactured small rockets is still very valid.
To explain again at bottom line.
Yeah, so if you look at what SpaceX is doing, they've got one economic system, which is you reuse the large rockets and you don't have to produce as many of them, and you can get your costs down because of that and you get your flight rates up. We're looking at the other side of it. Since the satellites, the majority of them are small, 1,280 this year launched, which is a record, and most of them small enough to be carried on these small rockets. If you mass manufacture them like Henry Ford did with the Model T, you get the unit cost down so people can afford their individual rockets, and it becomes price competitive with the large reusable, and there's a lot of features about you can go where you want to go, when you want to go, kind of like your own personal car versus a bus.
Sure.
And so that's very attractive to the market. And there was at the time, about this time last year, almost 100 of these small rocket companies out there. COVID wiped out the majority of them. There's probably six or seven, and Phantom's one of them.
All right, so you're going to survive with Phantom.
We've done real well. So we started off October of last year very quietly. One of the former executives, Mike D'Angelo, and I pooled some of our own money to get started, and we decided to raise $500,000. We ended up raising $1 million during COVID. And, we're right now just closing another $4 million. May close it this week if we get lucky, maybe next week. But
will you be competing with your old company then, Vector?
So it's not clear.
Or is there a different kind of market? Or generally it's the same market?
So there's a lot of things that they can do, and it's not clear to me what they're going to do. I've read the same things you all have read, and I actually know the people who bought that. I'm actually the one that brought them to the table. I was trying to get them to save Vector after I left, after I resigned from the board, because I didn't want to be part of this Sue Happy shareholder lawsuit that I saw coming. I talked to General Spalding and these guys, and I actually went back to New York on my own nickel to try and get them interested in bringing Vector back to life. And So they waited long enough to where they picked up the assets from Vector. Lockheed bought the satellite assets because we had a lawsuit going with them, and this was a clear way to get out of that for them. So they teamed up with some folks out of Huntsville, Alabama, that I know very well, that we've actually, you know, had discussions with before. So they have a foot in the missile defense market for targets. They have a foot potentially in the launch market. So I'm not sure where they're going to go with it. My spidey senses tell me they're going to go after the targets and countermeasure stuff in the missile defense, and we won't see them. But who knows? I mean, I don't talk to them, and I wish them all the luck in the world. I really do. And it's one of those things where I think there's enough room in the market for four or five of us out there anyhow.
All right, we'll continue our conversation with Jim Cantrell, whose new company is up and running. It's called Phantom Space. We'll talk more with Jim in a moment. But Jim, right now I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. That's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Jim, are you aware of the Kringle?
I am, because you talked about it one time when I was here before, and I wouldn't try it.
I've talked about it. It's home of the Danish Kringle at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. What a wonderful pastry they put together. And, you know, a Kringle would be wonderful on New Year's Eve morning or a New Year's Eve day. I mean, New Year's Day, or really any morning. Check it out. They're open right now for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. It's the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line guests appear courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We continue with Jim Cantrell right after this.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk a little bit about, actually, I had their pizza last night. Vero Amore, I love their pizza. Had the Mediterranean pizza, and it was absolutely fantastic. I want to mention that Vero Amore right now, if you spend $100, they will give you a $25 gift card. That's going through the for the next couple of days, through the end of the year. At Vero Amore, there are two locations, and at their sister restaurant, Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We're speaking with Jim Cantrell, who is the former CEO of Vector Space, Vector Launch, actually, here in Tucson. His new company is called Phantom Space. Jim, when did, in your opinion, kind of the new space race begin, and what does that mean, new space race?
Yeah, it really started in the mid-'80s, by my estimation, when people were private citizens who were involved in building these things that went to other planets and into orbit around Earth. Got tired of waiting for the government. And so the Planetary Society, which was formed by Carl Sagan and Lou Friedman, really kind of led this. And then there were some others who started building these small satellites as early as 1985. And Gil Moore was one of my early mentors. He just passed away yesterday at age 93. And he started the first company called GlobeSat up in northern Utah. And so that's really when it started to take hold. And here we are, you know, some 40 years later, when things are starting to actually cook. You know, there was about $2 billion of investment in space this year. There'll probably be that much again next year from various entities. So it's taken a while to take root. And the new space is basically where we're doing things that the government used to do, but it's all been done with private capital and private companies.
That's pretty much the future you see then.
I think that's the only way it goes.
Government's less and less involvement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, government's good for a lot of things, but, you know, entrepreneurship is not one of them. And, you know, despite what we did with the Apollo program, generally inventing new technology is not another one of them. It's just not a very efficient system.
Is this particular new space race happening just in the United States, or what about the former Soviet Union, Russia? What about China? Are they involved?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So it's a worldwide phenomenon. It really is rooted in the United States, and I would say the majority of it is in the U.S., and majority of it's here in the Western United States as well. China is a big player, but China is barricaded off from our market space by U.S. law. The Soviets, the Russians now, ironically, were killed by Elon Musk and SpaceX. And, you know, when we went over there to try to buy rockets from the Russians, you know, it's funny to me that I look back, that was the seeds of their demise in this business. So they're not really players at all. Europeans are slowly coming to realize that they have to become a part of this because it's the future.
You had a very interesting experience in the post-Soviet Union. What was that all about?
Yeah, so my first job outside of internship with NASA was to work for the French Space Agency, and I was in Toulouse, France, on a joint Soviet-French mission to Mars, and we were building in France a balloon for Mars. They were building the all the stuff that would get us there and then would enter the atmosphere and so forth. So I got to know the Soviets, and I got to know the Soviet Union, and then the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, and so I ended up about a year later coming back to the United States because the program died. None of our colleagues were getting paid by the government after the collapse. And when I came back, nobody would hire me because I was considered contaminated, you know, by the French and the Russians. And I was a Reagan voter back then, you know, so it was kind of ironic to me. You know, there's one thing I've always been as an hardcore anti-communist, but to be considered, you know, part of them was really ironic. But my university hired me back. They had a space lab. And then within about 3 weeks, my boss, Frank Redd, he shows up with one of his friends from West Point who was in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and they had some money that they wanted to try to get back into the Soviet Union to stop brain drain. So I spent the next 6 years off and on doing work for the Defense Intelligence Agency through some other, the money was pushed through some other groups, and we were trying to stop people from going to work for North Koreans and the Iranians, and so we were helping them convert ICBMs to rocket launchers, and we actually launched a satellite out of Kazakhstan, and so there was a lot of interesting stories about guns held to my head. I've been under house arrest over there, and it's an interesting period of life that at the time seemed inconvenient, but now as I look back on it, you can see that it was really quite something unique.
Were you involved with bioweapons at all?
Yeah, so part of what we stumbled into was the bioweapons programs that the former Soviet Union had in places like Kazakhstan, where they would just leave these facilities completely unguarded. And so part of our job was to report back what we would hear and see. And, they would take us for tours of the damnedest things when we would go around. When they knew we had money and these governments would roll out the red carpet, we'd get to see all sorts of things you can't imagine. We got into forbidden cities. We got into where they were making space-based nuclear reactors and bioweapons plants in Kazakhstan. So there was even one program called Project Sapphire, where Kazakhstan had a whole bunch of weapons-grade uranium in Folgers cans stored in this big warehouse. So we had heard about that and passed that on. That ended up being bought by the United States and brought back. So yeah, I've seen all that unfortunate stuff. I've been vaccinated for anthrax and all that crazy, crazy stuff. Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever know the real story about the origins of COVID-19?
Oh, I doubt, because nobody seems inherently interested in telling the real story. I mean, there's enough blame to go around for accidents, which is what I think it was. And then there's enough, this business of bioweapons gets kind of cagey, and that's what I learned from it. You always say it's a defensive activity you're doing, but in oftentimes it's a mirror for an offensive activity. If you want to understand how the DNA of a certain virus can adhere to the DNA of a human, and you want to understand that mechanism, that can be used either way. And so I don't think there's any incentive for the Chinese or even the U.S. government to really talk that whole thing through. And I just look back, and I still maintain the way this was treated internally in China, I think it was an accident. I think it was a bioweapons activity. Call it a defensive one. I don't think that the Chinese, plotted this whole thing up, knew how it was going to turn out. It was an accident, and they tried to contain it. And when it wouldn't contain, then plan B. And so here we are.
Yeah. So that's, who knows if we'll ever know what happened.
Yeah, I don't think we ever will. I certainly don't know. And, I look at, I consider this an overreaction. And I know it's not a popular opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I think our reaction to a virus that kills, 6% of people it infects is, and killing the economy is an overreaction. But I think it's an overreaction for a reason, because it we knew at the intelligence level, I believe we knew that it was some sort of basis in a bioweapons lab, and it could be a whole lot worse. And then once that's out, now we're it becomes a lot of forces in politics and in society that, wear the mask, don't wear the mask,
Right.
This guy shuts down, that guy shuts down. I mean, it's been good for me in my business, COVID. I'll be honest, but I wouldn't wish it on anybody ever. I wouldn't wish this pandemic to come across. And it's been horrible. It's been horrible for a lot of business owners, and I feel for them.
With the vaccine, the new platform that it's designed on, there's a Nobel Prize waiting to be for the way this is coming down.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, my understanding is this is the first RNA vaccine that's ever been done. So, that gives me pause to take it, I'll be honest.
Tell me a little bit about where we go now with your company. What's the next step?
Sure.
With Phantom Space.
So Phantom, we're actually cash flow positive. So we're building a satellite for what amounts to a DOD customer. It's a large radar satellite.
A Department of Defense customer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. U.S. And so it's through another company. And so we're in the middle of that. It'll probably fly at the end of this year. And right now we've raised roughly $5 million. We're going to continue to raise some more money, but we've taken a different approach on the rocket, and we've started already building our first development model, and we're going to be flying within 2 years. So 2 years from today, I hope I can come back and tell you we've had a good flight.
Out of our area here?
No. So we've got right now agreements with the Air Force to fly on the West Coast out of Annenberg. And
okay.
We're building a facility right now. We're in the process of getting that in place. Same in the East Coast at Cape Canaveral. So there's an old abandoned Delta site that has two launch pads that we're in negotiation on the environmental side of that. It's all about explosive siting and environmental impact statements, as it turns out.
Where will the rockets be built, though?
They'll be built here.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, for now, we've got a small little facility because we're just going to build four with the money we're raising. And the engines are done because we're buying them from somebody in Colorado that has qualified them. So our avionics, our flight computers, we license from NASA. So we've actually taken a totally different approach in saying that it's hard enough to build a rocket without having to develop all the technology.
Jim Cantrell, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Jim Cantrell, his new operation is Phantom Space and based here in Tucson. Happy New Year, Jim. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. It's the Buckmaster Show on the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back. Adelita Grijalva, Pima County Supervisor, with us right after this.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. A modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, wrapping up 10 full years on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We will launch into our 11th year, so the 10-year anniversary show will actually be coming up on Monday. Green Things, 50 years and still growing. Speaking of anniversaries, Green Things, 3384 East River Road. They've had a great holiday season. They grew 25,000 poinsettias. They were grown locally. And lots of good cheer and brightening up a lot of homes this holiday season. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Pima County Supervisor Adelita Grijalva, also a member of the five-member TUSD, Tucson Unified Governing Board. Adelita, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Have you been sworn in, or are you still a supervisor-elect, or what?
Well, technically, I think supervisor-elect until tomorrow midnight, because, you know, everyone is still serving until tomorrow, but we just saw the agenda, and there it is at the top, Supervisor Grijalva. So
there you go.
It's feeling very real, yeah.
Now, what about your experience with COVID? You did test positive. How did that go? Share with our listeners.
Yeah, for me, I think I was very lucky that I had a fairly mild symptoms, headache, fatigue, lost my sense of taste for a day. The hardest part, I think, was being isolated from my family. But, you know, my daughter celebrated her 14th birthday without me. But in the grand scheme of things, I was able to come home, and so many people I know haven't. So I feel very, very blessed and fortunate. But, you know, I have been taking all of the supplements that when we were doing research for my dad, I've been taking those since August. And so I am convinced that that helped, along with all of the good vibes and prayers people were sending me.
Yeah, you posted on Facebook a picture of some of those supplements. Some of them I'm using daily. Elderberry extract, that was one of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, elderberry, zinc.
Zinc.
Vitamins C and D3.
Yep.
Those are the big ones. And then there's a couple others that are, you know, you can put into teas and that kind of thing. So, but those have been zinc and vitamin C and D, I think, are the biggies, yeah, that everyone is pushing.
Yeah, vitamin D, they're finding actually studies show that 77% of those that wind up in really bad shape in the hospital from COVID have a deficiency of vitamin D.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense to me.
So,
you know, we're not necessarily getting out eating as, you know, as healthy, yeah, as maybe we did before. Yeah.
Do you agree with our friend Councilman Kasacek from his editorial in the paper yesterday? The U of A should consider not bringing back the students to campus and kind of delay in-person coursework until COVID-19 infections have stabilized?
I do. I agree that we should. It's the same reason that I have been supportive of the decision to keep Tucson Unified closed. I think that we have rampant spread, and it's as worse as it's ever been, and this is not the time to bring back students from all over the country to the heart of our town.
When is the first board meeting? Your board meeting?
January 5th for both boards.
So
USD and
will it be? Is it possible that you will make an try to get a resolution urging the U of A not to bring back in-person students on campus?
Well, and what I'm hoping for is that our Pima County Health Department, in providing the update, will encourage all schools to stay remote and make a really big statement that way, because it appears that our governor, in trying to avoid another shutdown, continues to change the markers for when, you know, in-person dining closes and schools closing. So the guidelines that were set out before have changed significantly since the beginning, because I think that the writing's on the wall that we're not going to get down to the numbers that we were in, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
It's a very
not anytime soon.
It's a very difficult situation. We've got a really, I think, a very difficult month ahead of us. I have so many people, Adelita Grijalva, ask me, when can I get my shot? What are you hearing from the health director, Dr. Cullen? How's the vaccination rollout going? Can you kind of give us a feel for that?
Yeah, I think from what I'm understanding, the vaccination schedule is going fairly well and on track. Initially, you're talking about healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, people that are working with people with COVID, and then working into some of our retirement facilities and elderly facilities where the spread is pretty significant and the loss is even higher in those areas. And then, looking at where everyone else falls. I mean, I think that it's important to make sure to take care of the people that are working with those of us that are the most vulnerable, those of us that are sick with COVID in the hospitals. And so that rollout, my brother-in-law is actually a doctor, and he received his first vaccine, the first of two today, because while he is doing remote, they're really looking at bringing back everybody that has a medical degree that is in any system to come and work and pull them first before we pull retired, doctors and those in the medical profession.
So,
but from what I understand, this it's going as well as it can. As soon as we get more vaccines, I think they're looking at how do we provide support to some of these other sites, smaller sites that may not have the capacity with the freezers and the kind of temperatures that some of these vaccines need to maintain.
After we get past this initial phase, will Walgreens and CVS and Walmart and some of the other, are they all going to be the providers for the shot? Do we know that?
We don't know that because a lot of it depends on the supply. The demand is very high, but we also have new vaccines in the works right now. So Johnson & Johnson has one that is a one shot. We have others that are coming online across in the globe. And so once the FDA approves those for use, then I think we might be in a better position where we have more of them. But it's kind of like what happened with our testing sites. When we first started testing, there were only like three or four sites in all of Pima County that had testing. And now it's kind of spread to a lot more places. I anticipate that it will do the same thing with the vaccine once we have more of it. And they don't have to be maintained in such cold environments.
Let's go to our live line. Susie has a comment about the use of zinc, I believe. Susie, you're on the Buckmaster Show with Adelita Grijalva. What's on your mind about zinc?
Well, I just recently learned that if you have been in the grocery store or around people that you don't know, if you have in your purse or carry in your pocket a product called Cold Ease, it's been out for years.
I use it every day, Susie.
Okay.
Cold Ease, yeah.
What they found is, let's say you breathed in some COVID. If you have that in your mouth and suck on it, it will kill that COVID.
Wow.
I know. That's pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with Dr. Cullen from the Pima County Health Department 3 weeks ago, and it was actually the day that next day her test came back positive for COVID, and I was telling her about the supplements that I was taking, and she said, "Yep, those are the big three: zinc, C, and D3." So,
right, but you want to catch it when it's right in your mouth.
I would hope if that works, I will be popping colds all day.
So, absolutely. Susie, before we let you go, so you're saying like if you go to the salon or wherever, get a haircut, then after you depart the salon, just pop a Cold Ease.
Right.
That actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, well, it's back in your throat, in your mucous membranes
at
that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to knock it out. Boom.
Yeah.
Now, that's true about the blood level of zinc.
Yeah.
That is a true thing, too, like Adelaide said. But you still, that's just your blood level. You want to catch it before it gets down your throat.
Thank you so much, Susie. Very good advice, I think, because I take Cold-EEZE every day anyway, at least one tablet. Anyway, Adelita, stick around. We're going to take a break right here, and we'll talk some more right after we take a break on the Buckmaster Show. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, one of our longtime sponsors as we have our 10-year anniversary here on the program, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Over the years, we have sent so many people over to that area. Of course, New Mexico has been hard hit like Arizona with COVID-19. So right now there's a pause in folks visiting New Mexico. That will end, hopefully, here in 2021. I'm confident it will. So you can start your planning right now by going to southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find a listing of great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now on the live line with soon-to-be Pima County Supervisor Atalita Grijalva, representing Democrat, representing District Number 5, and she will be officially a supervisor at the stroke of midnight as we turn the calendar over and welcome 2021 tomorrow. Atalita also is on the TUSD governing board, that five-member board. Atalita, let's talk about education for a moment. What's going to happen with kids getting back into the classroom? Myself, this is my guess, and I want to hear what you say, but I don't see that happening this next semester. Do you?
I don't. Well, definitely not the next quarter.
Yeah.
So we have 9 weeks. I do believe that the plan is still to continue those learning labs, the sites that for young people who need them because they don't have internet or, support at home, those kind of things. Those learning spaces will still be available on campuses, but that's the plan now. And I do think that it's important for us to look at what is going on our campuses. We have, because basically 1 in 4 tests are coming back positive, the risk for our employees that are going on campus is pretty significant as well. So I do think that that's something we need to look at. And I know that there's a lot of interest in the 3 new board members that are joining us on staying remote.
What's this board makeup going to be? You think it's going to be a little, how do I put this? Maybe not as a little more friendly to one another as some of the past boards. What's your take on this new board?
Well, I really feel that it's going to be, all of us are parents. And so I think that that is a dynamic that is different and that we've never had on our board. It's also the most diverse board that I think we've ever had in TUSD, definitely though, in my 18 years. And so that diversity of interests, of, ethnicity, of all of those things, I think are going to play into us really focusing on the issues that matter the most and less about, whether we personally get along one way or the other. And quite frankly, we're going to be remote for a while. And so we're going to get to know each other on Zoom. So I think that that's going to be another dynamic, because if you look at even just the change of one board member in the TUSD board with the addition of Bruce Burke, it did change the dynamics significantly. And, that towards the end of our, of this last year, a lot of the personality issues, all of those things that were coming across as kind of catty and ugly, those dissipated because we were really focused on what's important during this pandemic. And even though we disagreed, it was disagreements on how to get to a certain goal. It wasn't necessarily the end goal. So there were a lot of things that changed quite a bit on the TUSD board, and I anticipate that we're just going to continue in that momentum. Everybody, as they were running, dedicated, to being collegial and working together and, kind of ending the ugly sort of
You're saying
of
it's
the district.
More of a professional board.
Well, I do think that
professional attitude. Yeah.
Well, I don't, and I think some of it has to do with the fact that, the political differences really seeped in, where this board seems to be a lot more aligned with what the goals should be versus some of the other. Because, education, unfortunately, has become very partisan. And so I think this board is the impression that I have anyway. Is that the things that we're going to be focused on are really just good for kids, good for our employees, and less about partisan.
Well, we had Dr. Trujillo comes on the program at least every 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and the headline out of his visit a couple of weeks ago, Atalita Grijalva, was the fact that you and the board members are going to be facing a huge deficit. $20 million is the new estimate.
And some of that is because the state is still holding on to DSEG funds that are rightfully the district's. And that's the biggest hit right there. It, you know, everyone is dealing with enrollment losses and students that just were never able to connect. And it's not like they've gone to other schools. They just have, they're not anywhere. And so as much outreach as we've done, I think that it's been difficult to reach those students and those that are just discouraged by an online platform.
Yeah.
And and their parents, you know, it's unsafe to come on campuses. And so limiting that number is important. And I don't think that hybrid is the way to go.
I don't think
it's good for our kids.
The students have just disappeared from not only Tucson Unified, but all of the Southern Arizona districts. These people are just basically off the radar. It's a really, that's one of the real tragedies of the COVID-19/education piece of this.
Right. And I think some of it is, if you look at the biggest dips in our enrollment, it was right at kindergarten. And so if, you know, my nephews, both of them have started kindergarten in this online platform, and my sister and my sister-in-law have had real frustrations with what it looks like, because we know what kinder should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the students, this is just all they know of school. And so the platform for some of the students has been really difficult, especially if you have children with special education needs, with individualized education plans where they need more time. It's really difficult to do that small group work, but some of our teachers that are doing that is just amazing. Basically, you have an in-person classroom online, and that's the, I feel so fortunate that that's the experience that my children have had, and I know many other children in Tucson Unified have had that same experience.
Yeah. It's been a real mess. Mm-hmm. Let's go back.
It's frustrating for everybody, I got to say.
Yeah, let's go back to your other role that's coming up here next week with your first board meeting. Will Mr. Huckleberry be renewing his contract, or what is the board thinking about renewing it? What's the deal?
I believe that is not an issue that we're going to deal with this
meeting.
But I believe that that's already been dealt with, is my understanding. And the previous board has extended his contract. But again, that's something that is really up to him and this board to decide. But I have not had any indication that Mr. Huckleberry would like to be non-renewed. And so I have found him to be responsive, and in dealing with a lot of the issues that our county is dealing with, I would have liked to see more action in closing us down and having mandatory curfews. But, you know, I will be in that position on the 5th to have to make those decisions, and appreciate the work that the previous board has done, because I know that it hasn't been easy, just like I know the work on Tucson Unified. It's one thing to see it from the outside and talk about what you would do. It's quite another one to be in the office. And so
I know
I'm very careful to not criticize, because I completely understand that once you have all of the information that I'm not privy to yet, that, you know, my decisions might be different. And the fact that I think that we just have to be more transparent with our community about what we're dealing with.
All right, Adelita Grijalva, Happy New Year to you and your family. Thank you very much.
Happy New Year. Have a wonderful Happy New Year, and happy anniversary.
Yes, 10 years.
Significant. That's great.
Wrapping up 10 years right now of the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with you tomorrow with a pre-recorded program. So we'll be back live with the 10-year, beginning the 11th year on Monday. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, my engineer producer, Bill Buckmaster, saying have a great afternoon, everybody.